really love Marvel.
Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
I'm going to cover you like a birthday cake in my jizz.
Alex.
Yeah, right. No one knows what Gazelle is anyway. It's American. Get it right.
And Dave.
The Great Recession was caused by too much regulation.
Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to 134 Comic Conversations, where we talk all things comics for the week of March 2nd, 2016. And as always, I'm joined by co-hosts Dave and Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm fucking tired.
Sorry about that. And Dave.
Well, I'm looking at these UFC results, and I want to talk about them, but...
Yeah, because Alex has sworn us to secrecy.
I'm fucking... I'm three rounds into Tate home. Fucking trailer park crash.
Yeah, if you haven't figured it out by now from listening to us, you know, so many times, we do the show Saturday night. It goes up Wednesday morning. So usually right off the bat, we're doing, we'll have a lot of like UFC stuff. And Alex has yet to see the show, so he doesn't want to be spoiled.
Yep.
So keep your UFC spoilers in Wednesday to yourself.
Yeah, on Wednesday, you can Facebook me or whatever about it.
All right, let's go straight up. What's that?
I said I'll know by then.
I know, but it's just wacky. All right, let's go into our first segment, as always, news. Can't believe it. The impossible has happened, and Alex actually wants to talk about movie news.
Yeah, it's nothing positive.
Yeah, the first of which being New Line Cinema acquiring the rights to all the Vertigo licenses.
That's not actually the story. Okay, so New Line Cinema is a subsidiary of Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. And they were granted all the Vertigo stuff. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the kid from Third Rock from the Sun, he was director and maybe producer or something. Neil Gaiman was executive producer, but he had some sort of production role. He was leading the charge on the Sandman movie, and everything sounded really promising. Everything he'd done sounded really promising. He announced he's leaving because when it moved to New Line, he had disagreements over the direction the film should take. Now, at first you think, okay, well, that's not a big deal. And then I read they got a new screenwriter, and I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? I look it up. This is the guy who wrote the screenplays for the Nightmare on Elm Street remake and the fucking Thing remake. So, for one of the best and most complex comic stories ever, they have hired a guy who turned out two pieces of shit that ruined perfectly good movies, which were just horror movies, by the way. So what I judge from this is New Line Cinema has no fucking idea what Sandman is, and they don't know what they're doing, and this movie's going to suck now. We don't know if Gaiman's going to leave the project yet. We don't know anything about that, but wouldn't shock me. They fucked this movie now.
Yeah. Oh, well, I imagine it's the first and it's not going to be the last of, you know, these major motion picture bastardizing comic book properties. It's not the first and it's not the last.
I always said it shouldn't have been a movie anyway.
Yeah, but at least with Jason Gordon-Levitt.
It should be an anthology series like on HBO or something.
Yeah, it should definitely be on HBO or... You know, even Netflix, but I don't think Netflix is going to take DC on. And it should be long form. It should not be a movie, but whatever.
Yeah, okay. And the next news story is Joss Whedon coming back to Marvel.
Yeah, he's teaming back up with John Cass to write the 75th anniversary Captain America comic book. He's writing Captain America Sam Wilson. Apparently it's getting released on March 30th. I guess it's been kept under wraps for a while, but yeah, it was let known this past week.
I'm not excited because I don't like him as a comic book writer.
Yeah,
but
neither do I.
But he'll sell, and Sam Wilson is not selling.
He needs all the help he can get.
Yeah, especially when Steve Rogers comes back, he's going to need the fucking help. So on that count, it's a smart move on a fucking quality standpoint.
Yeah, well, and it's also an anniversary issue, so it'll be double size, and I'm sure it'll, you know.
It'll sell well, but who's to say if it'll be any good?
I don't even know if it's one issue or if it's several. They just says they're teaming up on an all-new story, so it could be like one arc or it could be just one issue.
Yeah, it could be one arc.
I still have attitude against Whedon for fucking Astonishing X-Men. You're following my fucking favorite X-Men run. You're following new X-Men. And what do? You fucking take everything that was in New X-Men, throw it out the fucking window, and turn it all back to what it was before Morrison came in to save your fucking lagging franchise. Good job, Whedon. Oh, but he got to put fucking Kitty Pryde over, so yeah.
Well, to be fair, you know, most writers will do that when they'll come on to a title. They'll reset the table and do whatever the hell they want to do with the characters. Yeah, so.
When you've been given fucking gold and you decide, no, I want some fucking bronze, like, shoot for the stars.
To be fair, I'm not saying, you know, this is right, but I'm just saying to be fair, he didn't really have, you know, he didn't get to call the shots.
I think he probably did. He was a fucking bigger name than anybody at Marvel.
But it's not like he willingly chose to follow the Morrison run. It's just they stuck him on. And,
No, you're correct. He didn't do that.
So, I'm not saying that's right. I'm just saying to be fair.
All right, whatever. Fuck him. Age of Ultron wasn't that good. Fuck.
Yeah, I know. That's why they took him off the Avengers franchise. All right, and our final, I guess you would say, kind of movie news would be Shang-Chi is going to be part of the Iron Fist Netflix series?
Yes. It's
obviously in response to complaints that Iron Fist is going to be white.
Yes. For those of you that are outraged that, you know, a white character is being played by a white man.
you're getting your new and different and forward-thinking Asian martial artists in this show.
And how racist is that, by the way? Oh, we got a martial arts guy, so we got to make him Asian.
You could make the argument it's not racist because, you know, the guy does kung fu. It comes from Asia.
Yeah, but still, it's like your first opportunity to get an Asian character in that franchise, and it's like, let's make him the kung fu guy.
Dude, all these comic people are fucking racist. If they did a show about a guy who does Brazilian jiu-jitsu, he'd probably be from fucking Stockton 209, what?
Yes. Nice. All right, and not necessarily comic book or movie news related, but it's news pertaining to the podcast. We have landed yet another guest for this fine show, the Fallen Angel, the Ring of Honor superstar, Christopher Daniels.
Does he still go by Fallen Angel?
No, he has a new name now.
What's his new
name? He hasn't used that for a while, man.
Okay, my mistake.
He calls himself the Almighty Christopher Daniels.
He upgrade. He's no longer an angel. He is now God.
Awesome.
I'm a big Christopher Daniels fan. I'm not going to be in this interview again.
Oh,
but I am a big fan. I'm sure I'll come up with questions for you to ask. this interview will touch on wrestling, but our goal here is to talk to him about comics.
Yeah, he's here to talk the Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor show WrestleMania weekend. But he's also here because we're uniquely qualified that we know pro wrestling and comic books. We're also going to be talking his All Yeah Comics title with both him and Kazarian on. So we're gonna be talking to Christopher Daniels about that book as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and that does it for news, and I guess I'm going to call it announcements. So let's go into this week's books. This week's books include Swamp Thing 3, Sheriff of Babylon 4, Deadly Class 19, Discipline 1, Avengers Standoff Alpha 1, A-Force, Black Widow 1, Darth Vader 17, Invincible Iron Man 7, Old Man Logan 3, Spider-Man 2, and Uncanny Avengers 6.
By the way, what was that music from?
That is from Undertale.
Undertale?
Oh, yes, okay. the very popular Steam game. It is the battle when you fight the character Sans. So, wacky song for a wacky character. All right, let's go into our first review, Swamp Thing.
Well, in this issue, we see Swamp Thing. He's in a swamp. He's wrestling some anaconda or whatever it is, and Matt Cable shows up and he shoots it. He tells him that he's felt guilty all this time, that Swamp Thing is no longer human, so He went off looking for something that would be able to turn him back into a human. So he found something called the Hand of Fatima.
Mm-hmm. And wait a minute. You're leaving the very important part out.
What?
He shoots the snake and Swamp Thing is very upset with him. Because apparently the snake and Swamp Thing, they wrestle all the time. They're buddies. And he just came up, shot the fucking snake because he thought it was trying to kill Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing's like, dude, you know me. I would have been fucking fine. It's a snake. What's it going to do? He's killed this innocent creature. So they're already off to a bad foot. But that was foreshadowing for what would happen at the end of the issue because Cable was kind of a dick there. So that actually was an important story point.
Yeah. So after he learns that he stole this hand of Fatima, they go to Satana Satara's home. And she was like, yeah, I think I can help you out, but there's going to be some consequences.
It's really popular with magic.
And he stressed, he's like, there's always consequences for every action. That's life. He sort of brushed it off, not knowing. He's like, whatever. I don't think there's going to be anything that big a deal.
I don't buy. She's running around fucking casting 800 million spells, talking backwards and shit. Nothing ever happens to her.
Exactly. I think she just meant, in other words, there's no reversion. There's no going back to being the Swamp Thing if I do this, so.
They showed the zombie again with the mouth sewn up. Something's going on there.
They were going to cut it open. The mortician or the, what do you call the people who do autopsies?
Forensics?
Yeah, whatever. They were like, are you sure we can't cut this thing's mouth open? They're like, no. Okay.
Like, it'd be kind of hard to do the autopsy, but one of the guys is wise to the situation. He's like, trust me, we're going to have a new set of problems if we open this stitching mouth, so.
Yeah, so at the end of the issue, they performed a spell, and Alec Holland is no longer Swamp Thing, but now Matt Cable is.
And he was evil because he's like, ha ha, I have your power now, right?
So that's where it ends. This is issue 3 of 6, so we got 3 more issues.
Yeah, it was a fine issue, but it's like we said before, this is a very old school story, so it's moving well. Something happens in every issue. The story keeps going forward. But yeah,
I'm just kind of bummed out because I'd be cool with this being a regular run because this is actually really good stuff.
Yeah, because it, every issue ends with something happening. And a lot of comics we have, they don't really do that.
No.
It's a continuing story, but each issue almost feels kind of self-contained also.
It's self-contained, but if you happen to read all the issues, it builds upon that. So it rewards you for sticking around.
Yeah, and I'd said before, you know, I'm not up with the current Swamp Thing continuity, but you don't really need to be to understand what's going on in the story.
No, it's not super important.
Yeah.
So since I sort of glossed over it, Swamp Thing number 3, writer Lee Wynn, art by Kelly Jones. So from there, we're going to go to our next title, Sheriff of Babylon number 4, writer Tom King, art by Mitch Gerards.
Do you like this book yet?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you.
I have a love-hate relationship with this book. There's aspects of it that I like, but then the narrative bounces all over the place, and I'm not entirely sure what's going on. But like I said, that's not a knock on the book. That's just me. And I read a lot of books really fast, so it's...
I absolutely love the Iraqi cop. Best character.
Well, as we learned in this issue, if you remember or recall in the last issue, the female character, Sophia, she was attacked in her... she was in some car, and RPG shot them. Well, in this issue, we found out that she survived the blast. Apparently, it had been up-armored. But in the process, apparently she was pregnant with the character, with the American character Christopher's child.
Ooh.
She's not anymore.
Yeah, she had a miscarriage. So. Also, if you recall in the last issue, the one cop, the Iraqi cop Nasir, mm-hmm. he was kidnapped. And then his wife, I guess he had tipped off his wife. His wife was undercover some homeless woman or something.
This was so awesome.
And she killed his kidnappers.
Wait, this is the best scene in the comic. So the kidnappers, they finally take off the guy's blindfold and they're walking with him. They're like, yeah, you know, we got to do this for Allah and, you know, for our people and blah, blah, blah. And his fucking wife is just posing as a homeless woman, and suddenly out from under the what's the deal they wear called? The Habib?
No, it's not a Habib. Hijab?
The under the fucking, the dress thing they wear, fucking pulls a shotgun out and blows the two guys away.
Nice.
And then the cop, you know, he went to go to the green zone. He's chilling with the American officer, the training guy. He's chilling with him because they're, you know, safe there. And, girl comes to talk to him too.
They're trying to come up with a plan to figure out why they were attacked and who's behind it, and you know,
They know why. It's because they were all meeting with Americans.
Well, yeah, but there's more to it than just that.
Yeah, but that's the core.
Yeah. So apparently they've got some sort of plan being formulated, and Sophia leaves. And then we get a reveal that, you know, Nasir knows her because he's the one responsible for killing her family while she was in the U.S. during the first Gulf War.
Yeah, but he's been very upfront about, you know, he worked for Saddam.
Yeah.
He was in the army. He's not necessarily proud of what he did, but he's a very kind of matter of fact guy. And he's like, this is the way it was. This is what I did. You know, he didn't really feel bad for it because he was just doing what he had to do, or, you know, his fucking family might have been killed if he refused to do it. So, you know, he's not coming right out and telling her, but he's not feeling horrible about it. There was a lot of local color in this issue too. You had, what's his name, Christopher?
Yeah, he got ripped off by some Iraqi kid.
That was
the best part.
Talking the broken English and fucking selling him like, counterfeit
the fuck
American money. And you know, he said, oh, the soldiers, they used to march on it, and it's like they're marching on America. And then he says something like, he's like, oh, what the fuck, and he's like, fuck, and then he pulls out the fucking porn mags and is trying to sell them to him. Very rare is great. Nasir told him later he got ripped off when he bought the shit.
Yeah, he paid $15, I think.
And he asked him, he's like, is it true you guys marched over this stuff? He's like, man, I was marching. I wasn't looking at what I was marching on.
Nice.
That was good. I like this book. I like pretty much every character. And the girl, Sophia, that's not her real name. They explain. It was actually kind of a cute story because they opened up with like this like fairy tale story about Muhammad's wife. That's who she was named after. Which, you know, was good. It was a good story. But her real name's not Sophia. That's just what they called her in America.
It's like Sophila, I think, or I'd have to look it up.
That's just it was
somewhat similar to Sophia, but that was not her name. Her name has connotations to the religion. But in America, we don't know shit about the Muslims, so we didn't.
It's Sophia.
Yeah, so it's close. But, yeah, she told that story, and her and Nasir's wife got into it because they were saying she was talking like an American, which causes her offense because, you know, she grew up in America and is now trying to come back. So there's like a little bit of infighting there over that and the way she was talking.
Yeah, good read. Like I said, not my cup of tea, but I can recognize it's a good book.
He's really good with characters. That's why Vision's so good.
All right, let's move on to the Image portion of the show. Deadly Class 19, writer Rick Remender, art by Wesley Craig.
It's another pretty good issue here. Yep. It opened up kind of funny. They were like in a record shop, and some dude is like arguing with some metalhead. Because the guy was making fun of him for buying a B-52 record or something.
Yeah, he was ripping on him. He's like, really, dude? You're going to buy this? Are you going to buy this for a girl or your sister or something? He's like, you know what? You've only heard the one song, the Rock Lobster song. And if you actually sit there and listen to a whole album, it's actually pretty good. And he even went as far to turn the tables on the guy. He's like, you know what? You guys and your metalheads, you guys all listen to the same music. You all dress the same. And I choose to listen to what I want to listen to and be my own person.
Yeah, although after all that happened, the entire shop got shot up because Billy, he's on a run from Victor and the other goons that were sent in by Shabnam. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so he's on the run. You know, they're on this killing spree throughout the town. It's just basically him and Victor, the Russian. And he ends up fighting him off, but, you know, right as Marcus and Saya come to rescue him. So he's kind of had enough of all of this. And he's like, look, we need to get out of here. I don't want to be like them. Let's just leave and find a new life somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So they kind of all look at each other and like, yeah, you know, you're right. So they're like, they're going to take refuge somewhere. And then it kind of shows Shabnam talking to that chick of his. And he receives a phone call. And it's talking about how, it's a desperate rat. So then we show them, from what I understand, this is where Marcus's old orphanage, right?
I'm not positive, but it wouldn't surprise me if that was it.
I think that's what it was, mm-hmm. but I'm not 100% sure. Well, anyways, you see Billy in a bedroom, and they make it seem like he's the one who called up Shabnam, trying to, you know, as a desperate person. Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, well, if that's the case, how the hell did he call? Why is the phone still operational in the freaking abandoned building?
Yeah, I don't know. It isn't the best setup for the next issue, but it certainly adds some.
Well, it could be his work. It could have not been him. It just, you know, kind of, because, you know, you didn't see him like directly put it down or nothing, but they
it's
focused
implied.
On.
It's heavily implied, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm like, if that's the case, Remender fucked up because I'm like, so how the hell is the freaking phone still operational?
Yeah, we'll see. This book feels like it's building to a series conclusion because while it's still good, they like everything seems to be building crescendo, and it's almost like, well, after this, the series is going to be over.
Well, yeah, I mean, I never expected this to go on forever.
I at least hope it would have gone a little bit longer than, you know, let's see, what issue this is. This is issue 19. I can't imagine this goes over 25.
30 tops, maybe?
I don't know, dude. It's hard to say. He clearly has an end goal in mind, and it seems to be coming up pretty soon, so. But solid read. Good book. All right, let's move on to our final Image book. One that Dave didn't like. I wasn't sure if Alex was going to like it. It was actually a pretty good book, but I know why Dave didn't like it, but I can understand why. So the writer was Peter Milligan. Let's see if I can pronounce the writer. What?
I'm sorry. I just finished the UFC show. Conor McGregor couldn't beat Diaz on 2 weeks of training. Fuck you, Ireland.
Did you hear the promo that,
No, I stopped it because we're doing the show, but I didn't read Deadly Class, so I watched that fight. Holy shit, that was great. What a bitch.
They asked him about, did this surprise you? He was like, nah, motherfucker.
That is pretty funny.
I love it. You guys, for Comic Conversation with Listener, Alex is a big fan of the Diaz brothers, so this makes him very happy.
Very much good. All right, let's continue our review. Disciple number one, writer Peter Milligan, art by Leonardo.
Oh, no. It's the Discipline.
It's the Discipline.
I kept doing that. I don't know why.
Which they repeated several times throughout the issue.
I must be dyslexic.
I talked with Marvel about this, and Marvel didn't like this. I thought Fat Man wasn't going to like it.
No, I liked it, but I told Dave, he doesn't like stuff like this. He's not going to like it. And I don't know about you. I don't remember what you thought of Sex Criminals, but I'm like, stuff like that, I'm like, I don't know how Alex is going to weigh in. But
see,
I really know
this
Dave's
isn't like Sex Criminals, though. That's the thing. That's why I like this book.
Yeah, but in the sense that it's out there and it's very, you know, it's a book so focused on sex. I didn't know
it's not focused on sex, though.
That, at least this see,
was. It wasn't its issue.
Here's the thing. The sex is there. It's definitely there. That's clear. It's moving the plot forward.
It's moving the plot along. It's going to build up to something, but it's not the central focus of this book.
This book has a lot of sex, which is involved in the plot, but the plot is not about sex. And they were really clear in that. He did a lot of kind of clever things, which is what I would expect from Peter Milligan, because he's often a very good writer, but he's also a complex writer. He doesn't give you everything up front. When I talked to David about this, he said, he's like, you know, there's fucking demons banging chicks. I fucking watch some Japanese cartoons, see that shit all day long. That wasn't the point, though. They made it very clear that the sex in this book was happening for a particular reason. We don't know what that reason is quite yet, except there's some sort of cult who are probably good, who are against these demons, and somehow recruiting people to this cult involves sex. I got a strong...
The main character is called Melissa. She's basically in a boring marriage, and she's having an affair with one of these guys who's part of the group.
She doesn't quite have the affair, and he doesn't intend it to be an affair necessarily. There was a big 50 Shades of Grey thing going on in this, except the main character actually has a personality. So it was stronger than that. Oh, what burn. It is it's not that she's in a boring marriage. She's in a marriage where the husband is completely absent. She's married to a guy who's like a multimillionaire, but because of that, because of his job, he's never there. We know that about her. So sexually, emotionally, she's completely unfulfilled. She has her deepest conversations with her fucking dog.
Hemingway's name.
Yeah, Hemingway. She's got the big excitement of her day is going to the art gallery and looking at creepy erotic art.
Yeah, the Venus and the Satyr by Goyen.
Yeah, and that's where what's his name, Orlando.
Yes.
Yeah, Orlando comes and he meets up with her. He later points out he recognized that she was a woman. Basically in need of sex, but she was also sort of clever, which is exactly what he's looking for. She's a good character, though, because in one issue they were able to make her three-dimensional. She's not just some lonely housewife who wants to get fucked. There's more going on to her. We saw a little bit about her problems. She's got a sister. She's got a mom. The mom's sick. The sister's taking care of her. The sister kind of hates on her because she's not taking care of the mom, even though she's the one with all the money. So there was more to it. The Orlando guy, we didn't get a whole lot into him. We don't know a lot about him, except he works for something.
Yeah, it almost looks like it's back in ancient Greece.
Yeah, that's the except they were like alien-looking dudes. But, I mean, they had on the robes and the buildings were, you know, reminiscent of the ancient Greek stuff. And it's called the Discipline. But we don't know what that is. We just know they're fighting demons.
For some reason.
For reasons. We don't know why.
Yeah, we don't know.
It was a first issue, so they're not going to tell us. But yeah, so this issue, it had a lot of sex in it. And a lot of it was creepy demon sex happening.
It's used to set stuff up. It's not the focus of the book. And I get the feeling going forward, while this, it still may be here and there in the book, I think going forward, this book is going to be about something else.
Yeah, I think sex is always going to be a part of this book because that's kind of your visceral hook for this. It's what makes it different.
It's funny because it's great as a hook, but to keep rearing its head where it may not necessarily belong, but understand why it's going to do it if it does in the future.
But I think he's going to make it so
central to the story?
That it's integral to the plot. They're going to explain more why these things are going on, what exactly is happening. And it's therefore going to be important to the plot. It's not just sex for the sake of let's draw sex.
I'll reiterate, there's plenty of hentai that are like this, just so you know.
I don't have as much experience with Japanese porn cartoons as you do, apparently.
I've seen reviews. That's what I'm saying.
I have my doubts. They're written quite as well as this.
That's another thing. Yeah, I don't think they're as in depth, and it's for that kind of stuff. It's a very loosely plotted story that happens to string together a bunch of sex scenes. Where this is the opposite.
Yeah, this is a book that has a story, and the sex scenes are involved in the story, as opposed to a story where there are a bunch of sex scenes and we have to quickly craft a story to bring them together. The sex in this book didn't take up a vast majority of the book. It tended to be kept to a couple panels or a page or two. And these aren't like romantic sex scenes. It was like, oh, here's a, she has a dream about like a
Well, the
demon fucking her.
But the demon part, she was clearly enjoying herself, or at least that's what I remember of it.
Well, yeah, but that's because they're dealing with a character who is sexually unfulfilled.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, there's some of that weird shit going on. Having said all that, I thought the art in this was very good. It was very interesting looking. The writing is very good. I like the character. I don't know enough about the male lead yet to make a judgment. But I like the female lead. I enjoyed this book. I'm glad Tony liked it because I want to continue reading it.
As do I. Dave, are you going to continue reading it or are you just going to hear what we say and then maybe pop your head and if
I'm not going to read it again.
Okay. And then before
we'll read it.
Yeah, it's a good book. All right, let's move on to the Marvel stuff. A-Force number 3, writer G. Willow Wilson, art by George Molina.
I don't know, dude. I like this book.
I'm on the fence. If you had to push me one way or another, I'd say I don't like this book. But it's slowly but surely winning me over.
Yeah, I like it. Dazzler might be dead.
the one character who I actually, believe it or not, I actually like in this book.
She's the only character I don't like. I mean, her function is to be the angry bitch on the team, which she did, but I tend to find that character to be incredibly annoying. So I found her incredibly annoying. Of course, Singularity is apparently bringing her back to life because she has god powers. In this issue, they tried to reason with antimatter, because they did find a way to stop him, but they determined that if they were to destroy him, it would also destroy Singularity, who they didn't want to destroy because she seems like a good young cosmic being. So they decided to meet with a guy and talk to him. So they met with him to talk to him, and he explained he doesn't know where he is, he doesn't know what's going on. So, you know, he needs to figure out what's going on. And they're like, okay, well, can you not kill people to do that? And he's like, of course I have to kill people. How am I going to find out what makes you tick unless I take you apart and look at you? And then I'll come back and I'll take over your planet. And they're like, okay, we're going to have to fight him. She-Hulk gets angry and smashes through him and rips his fucking head off after he murders Dazzler. He just kills her because they're fighting him out in outer space. Dazzler doesn't have any powers that let her breathe in space, so she got a spacesuit on, and he cracked her spacesuit open. As she was lying dead in Alpha Flight's hospital, Singularity goes in and does something, but is apparently going to bring her back to life. We still really don't have a team, because particularly Dazzler and Medusa, they have no urge to be on a team.
No, in fact, they bring up in the book fact that Medusa doesn't like being on a team because she doesn't like being an equal.
Yeah, because she's a queen. And they even brought that up and they're like, oh, well, you just don't like democracy because you're a monarch of your own kingdom. And she's like, yes, that's correct.
She's like, wow. I didn't think you'd really say that, but wow.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, I can't believe you did that. And she's like, well, it's, you know.
Dave, Alex, are you still there?
So.
Okay, perfect. Okay, you're back.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, that was it. They had the fight. We didn't really get the resolution. So, they're not going to kill Singularity because she's what's holding it together.
It's funny because that's my least favorite character. And if they have to kill anybody, I'm cool with them killing her.
But if they kill her, they have no reason to get together.
Yeah, I know. She brought the team together, and yeah, she's sort of focal to the team. She did the unifying thing behind.
Yeah, and so everything that's happened since the first issue has revolved around her anyway. She's a very, I think she's likable, but she's a very generic character because she's pretty much a 6-year-old girl. That's what her character is.
Yeah, she's lovable. She wants everybody to get along. But then at the same time, she's also kind of dangerously naive when she's trying to put all these characters together that don't know each other.
Yeah, but she's not like, you know, your normal 6-year-old who's, you know, like a sociopath. That sounds...
You sound like you're speaking from personal experience there, Alex.
That sounds very, very negative, but it actually is fact. Young children of that age, if you were to psychologically profile them, they would all come off as sociopaths. That's a factual thing. They actually
I know, I believe you, but it's just funny because you
I know, because I have a 5-year-old, but it's the way their brains function. They're not, they're not big into things like empathy or understanding others. They're very concerned with their own, because, you know, at that age, they're still developing their own sense of self. So as you're doing that, you're only going to focus on yourself. You're not worried about other people. Mm-hmm. That's a very normal thing. So in that way, you know, she is a little more developed, because when something bad happened to Dazzler, she felt terrible.
Yeah, she felt really like, bad. She's all, you know, I don't want to be in this team if it involved people dying, so.
Yeah, and you do, well, I mean, I did. You hate the character, but I did feel bad for her when, you know, she just wants her team to be back together, and she's feeling terrible that none of this is working out. But we don't have a resolution to the story yet, and we don't, even though they're all working together, we don't have a team formed yet. So
well, hopefully,
there's still room to grow.
Yeah, and hopefully Dazzler comes back, because that's the only character I like so far.
And then she could be bitchy and unlikable.
Maybe she'll line up. Maybe what's one of the things the singularity will do when fix her? Okay, I was going to go to the Avengers standoff book, but I was also pulling up Black Widow. I don't know if this is a joke from the people that do the comic list stuff, but they have the writer and the artist both listed as Chris Samnee. And if you actually read this week's Black Widow, you kind of understand why maybe they did that.
Who told him what to draw?
I'm just saying, you read this book, and who did the majority of the storytelling?
This was a movie opening action scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This took all of us about a minute to read.
Literally. Not exaggeration either.
I may have read it in 30 seconds.
And I didn't dislike this.
It was fine.
I think what Wade was coming at with this is, everyone knows the Black Widow character. You don't really need to introduce this character. It'd be like doing a new Iron Man book. Invincible Iron Man did not take pains to explain to us who Iron Man was, because we know who Iron Man is. I think this was like that, but he's setting the pace that this is going to be an action-heavy book. So his first issue was incredibly small amount of dialogue, enough to get us Black Widow has stolen something from S.H.I.E.L.D.
And is now on the run.
And is running from S.H.I.E.L.D. And that's what this issue was. It was her running from S.H.I.E.L.D. and fighting.
It was all action. You kind of had a couple of speech bubbles in the first couple pages, but literally 80 to 90% of this book was all action.
And there was a fight on a helicarrier. There was a fight in midair.
Yes.
There was a motorcycle chase. And then there was a final fight against
Night Fight or something.
Yeah, against an angry looking big guy, because she is a smaller woman, so she has to have the fight against the angry looking big guy who she beat the shit out of.
Good for her.
And they didn't reveal what she took, why she took it, why she couldn't just ask for it. They didn't reveal any of that. That's for the second issue. It is, however, Mark Waid, so he will tell us.
Art was good, by the way.
No, the art was very good. I mean, this artist is a very talented artist. He's obviously very comfortable working with Mark Waid. Mark Waid, to launch a new book where the first issue has no fucking dialogue, is obviously very comfortable with this artist in his ability to tell a story. I'm guessing the next issue is going to have a lot more dialogue.
I sure hope so, if we're going to continue reading this book.
Well, it's probably where they're going to explain what exactly she took and why she took it.
Yeah. I'm thinking something pertaining to what they're going, where their big overarching storyline with the big crossover.
I don't know about that, because this is Mark Waid, and Mark Waid, he wants to do his thing.
Okay.
He wouldn't write a book unless he had a story to tell.
Oh, maybe one issue and then it goes to another arc. Let me check the back of Avengers standoff. Let me see if there's a checklist for that.
Ooh, that's actually pretty good. And that actually plays perfectly into our next book. Avengers Standoff Alpha on Pleasant Hill number 1, writer Nick Spencer, art by, and since it's, I'm sure it's not pronounced the way it looks, Jesus Says.
This was
or Jesus.
A largely unnecessary issue, given we pretty much just read this.
Well, they revealed a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
they revealed some more stuff, but it was still 90% of this was rehash from the last Avengers standoff book, except this was this was a less interesting rehash, because we got we had Captain America discover that S.H.I.E.L.D. lied about,
Maria.
No, he did find out they lied. We already had a comic where Captain America got very upset that S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to use cosmic cube fragments to remake reality.
That was in a Captain America book, and they supposedly dropped that plan.
Yes, they said they dropped that plan. So in this issue, we had Captain America get upset at S.H.I.E.L.D. again because he found out they didn't, in fact, destroy the cosmic cubes.
That didn't happen in the last issue, by the way.
What?
He didn't find out in the last issue.
No, he found this out a while ago in another book. I'm just saying we already saw that in a book.
We didn't. No, he didn't.
Yes, we did. He got upset about the program.
Yeah, he got upset, but he
and in this, he got upset that they didn't actually destroy the program when they said. He was getting upset about the same thing again, which we'd already seen.
How is
then, then we had them showing the Pleasant Hill. It's the same thing because he's getting upset at S.H.I.E.L.D. over the same thing. He's getting upset at S.H.I.E.L.D. because they lied.
So is he supposed to be like, be okay with it then?
No, it's just I've already seen it. It's my point. What I was saying was a lot of this was rehashed and I'd already seen Cap get upset at S.H.I.E.L.D. He got upset at S.H.I.E.L.D. again. And then we had Cap getting introduced to Pleasant Hill and them explaining how Pleasant Hill works, which they did in the last issue. The difference was they gave the reveal that all the cosmic cube fragments formed together into a young girl, which was the mysterious little girl we saw in the last issue. That was fine. That makes sense. And it gave us the moral problem with the story wherein Cap wanted them to destroy the cosmic cube fragments. But since the cosmic cube fragments are now a little girl, which is presumably sentient, you can't kill that because you'd be killing a little girl. Of course, Bucky does not give a shit and will kill a little girl and is in fact coming to kill a little girl. But at the same time, the villains, as we saw in the last issue, have found a way to break the mind control and they have done so and attacked Pleasant Hill in this.
Hey, I'm just wondering about this. Since the cosmic cube is being used to change like how stuff looks and how people act, is Zemo and them, did they somehow transform back into their old selves, or are those holograms to make themselves look like their old selves?
I think it's the other way around.
Well, the other thing to remember is that they're not doing this by someone using a cosmic cube. This is a few cosmic cube fragments which have formed together into a sentient entity.
Yeah, but did that girl
Yes. That girl changed them all, but they didn't necessarily just find something to make them look the way they used to look. They might have actually developed something that could reverse what she did. That's what the fixer made. She wouldn't, since she's not a actual cosmic cube, may not have the same level of power as the cosmic cube would.
Oh, by the way, there is no Black Widow.
Think there would be.
So Alex is right.
Well, that's Wade didn't say, hey, give me that guy who I worked with on one of the most lauded runs of a character in forever, and we're going to do a book that ties into Avengers and fucking crossover. No, well, he's going
to tell. It seemed like to fall so perfectly into that story, though.
Oh, by the way, in this issue, we also got a reveal. We found out who the Whisperer was.
Which was anticlimactic, and they had Rick Jones say it was. So... That was fine.
That's the joke.
Nice.
It was the whole, just because you point out something's lame doesn't make it any less lame. But it was okay. It's fine. It was Rick Jones. And when they have when this leads into, you know, Civil War II, Rick Jones is a good character to have around and be a voice of reason.
Okay. Let's move on to our next book. Darth Vader 17, writer Karen Gillian, art by Salvador Lucaro.
I wasn't going to read this because I thought we weren't going to review Star Wars books anymore.
That's what I thought too. And then when I made the list, Dave was all, oh, you forgot Vader. And I'm like, forget. But you know what? Vader is the best of all the Star Wars books, at least in my opinion. So I was like, yeah, I'll continue reading then.
That was a really good issue. Is Vader being a badass again? That's good.
A lot of Empire internal politics.
Yes, they like that a lot because the reason they're doing it is Vader is a bad guy, but the Empire is also the bad guys. So if you put Vader against the Emperor, he sort of becomes a good guy while still being a bad guy.
Tig and Silo are conspiring against him.
Yeah, and he might have been the one who made Vader's robot body.
Yeah, Dr. Silo.
Yeah, we're not sure on that, but they had him strongly hint that he was the one who made Vader's robot body. Which, you know, is one of those reveals that it's not really that important, but you can pretend it is. You know?
It's yeah, there's also a part here where a bounty hunter came with a quote-unquote dead Dr. Aphra. And he's like, shut the fuck up, this isn't yeah. her.
Vader takes one look and he's like, that's not her, kill him.
That was awesome, and because there were nothing really left of it. It was just a bunch of ashes and like a broken skull, and he just knew from just looking at it.
Well, the guy did say, he's like, oh, Lord Vader, I didn't know you were the one who put out asking for this girl, and he's like, yeah, no one did. And so he was apparently trying to take advantage of whoever it was, and when he found out it was Vader, kind of realized he was fucked. poor bounty hunter.
I know.
Boba
Fett yeah, looking ripoff.
The main thing on this is Vader is now, it's in his best interest to act like he's working for the queen of this world, the queen he put in place. All of the ore barons who are under her have decided that she's not, you know, she's not strong enough. She's given in to the Empire, so yeah. We got to teach her a lesson. So they tried
a coup, more or less.
Yeah, they were going against their own, you know, rules. They were attacking this sacred place that she was at. But since Vader was there with his two cyborg apprentices, they cut their way into this thing and blew it up and killed everyone.
Yep.
So, but Silo, the guy who made all the robot apprentice for the Emperor that Vader killed.
They're the faux Jedi.
The fake Jedi, yeah, that were better because they're robots. That guy still wants to get rid of Vader so that he's higher up in the plan, so he's actually working with the Ore Barons to get Vader.
Yep. Although we find out here also the twin sister of the one of those
yeah.
She approaches Vader asking him to train her to beat her twin brother, talking about how there could only be one at the end, so.
And he told her to fuck off, basically.
Yep.
But I think that might have been like, you know, like this is a test thing.
You know, some people are already speculating, what if she survived the Return of the Jedi and she shows up in episode 8?
Yeah.
She's full as Laura Dern.
That's
not gonna happen.
Yeah, that's needlessly being hopeful.
That's nice that people think that, though.
baseless optimism. Yeah.
We have to make these comics matter.
Yeah, good luck. that goes back to the fact that what Alex was saying earlier before we did this review. Are we going to continue reading this? Because I thought we dropped all the Star Wars books.
This I want to continue reading because I actually like the story and want to see where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
That this on its own I think is strong enough of a story that we can keep talking about it. But most of these books, no. Like the number ones and stuff, we can read those. That's fine. They're doing the first number one based on the new movies.
Oh, coming up. Now?
The fighter pilot guy who everybody liked who was in the movie for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Poe.
Yeah, him and the droid. They're doing a comic about him.
Who's writing that again? Soul, right?
I don't remember.
Okay. All right, let's move on to our next title. Invincible Iron Man number 7, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Mike Diodato.
Dropping this book.
Ooh, thank you.
Done with it. This book is,
woo!
Bendisly written, and the art's good, and I don't give a shit. I'm going to try International Iron Man. It's
also being written by Bendis.
It's kind of, yeah, but that one's supposed to be more serious, and I trust Bendis on serious work more than I do on his lighthearted stuff. If I have to read another fucking Bendis comic where people give long speeches and the other character answers with yes, no, or okay, and I'm supposed to laugh because you did that 15 times in one issue, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. I'm so sick of that. I know it's his writing style, but I'm tired of it. I can't take it anymore. About halfway through this issue, I gave up. I finished reading it for the purpose of the review, but for fuck's sake, stop it, Bendis.
I ran out of time, so I didn't get to finish the second half of this issue either.
By the way, I like the issue. It was wordy, though. I do agree.
You got to understand. I'm not saying this is bad. I'm just saying I've had enough.
That's a lot of Marvel books nowadays, though. Where I'm just like, it's not bad. It's technically not bad, but same time, I have zero desire to continue reading this book.
Like I said, I've enjoyed this more than Amazing Spider-Man lately. So,
I've been wanting to drop too. So,
they mentioned Peter Parker. Like, yeah, he's doing my shtick now. He's talking about his company. He's beating mine.
Oh yeah, he mentioned the fact that Spider-Woman didn't ask for permission to start rocking the gimmick. He's all, but I'm glad that Miles at least asked permission before I started doing the Spider-Man shtick.
Well, that was in the Spider-Man book, though.
Yeah, you're getting.
Oh yeah, sorry about that. You mentioned Miles.
Well, Bendis wrote that too.
That was good. I like that.
Anyways, in this issue, Tony he sizes up Mary Jane about what her job is. And there was a little funny moment with talking about how she talked to Pepper Potts. And he's like, oh, it's a girl thing. It's between girls.
She's all, but I'm your employer. You should tell me what's going on. And he's like, girl code overrides whatever you're paying me, which you haven't yet.
I did like that. That was actually my favorite part of this issue where Tony was explaining that, he already knew what he was going to say to her because he already knew what she was going to say. He said that's one of his problems in dealing with people is that he didn't say I'm so smart, but he's so intelligent. He knows what everyone's going to say to him before they say it so that he formulates what he's going to respond with before they even start having the conversation so that he can think about other things. I like that description of him. I thought that was kind of a neat little take on how smart he is. So I did like that. So I didn't hate everything about this book.
And James Rhodes, War Machine, he's still in Tokyo. He's still being sequestered by some, I don't know, unknown assailant. I don't know who that is. I don't know if that's a new character. But his armor is being systematically dismantled. Apparently, Spider-Man made a cameo here because apparently Mary Jane has his emergency number. She gave it to Tony to be able to call him because apparently Spider-Man was in Tokyo visiting.
Yeah, which is retarded because then they show Spider-Man, he's swinging around. He's like, okay, I'm in one of the most populated cities in the world now. And for some reason, he thinks I'm going to be able to swing around and find this one guy.
Well, it was in the meantime while he got there because, he had to fly there. I don't know how long it's going to take for him to fly. But, I mean, it's something. He might have a spider-sense thing going on.
At least he asked. But, I mean, Spider-Man pointed out this is stupid, and it kind of was, but he had to do something. So.
Yeah. Well, anyways, the second part of the issue is there's an MIT student who's introduced. She's a black female, hyper-intelligent. They described her as 11 years old, but I don't know if that's actually – she's actually 11 or
– Was that Moon Girl?
Okay. I looked into this. There's a possibility that in the 2014 Iron Patriot series, Rhodes has a niece named Lila, who is young, extremely intelligent, and has a history of working with Stark-based armor, which this character was doing.
Okay, that could have been her then, since War Machine was in this.
But the character was referred to as Riri by her dorm mates, not Lila. So either this is a false identity, a nickname, or even a continuity error or change.
Wow. Covers a lot of ground there. All right, let's move on to our next book, Walking Dead 152, obviously writer and artist Robert Kirkman, and art by Charlie Adlard.
So in this issue, Eugene, he's talking to someone over that ham radio. Because remember, at the end of last issue, we found that he had been trying to find some people, and he ends up talking to somebody who says that they've been trying to look for people for the longest time, and they basically said, look, well, we need to learn to trust each other, so we can't tell our people that we're talking to each other until we feel comfortable enough to let them know. So Rick, he confronts the boy the son of the guy who he killed in the last issue. Remember, they try to assassinate him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the character Brandon, he's all pissed off because he killed his dad. So he attacks Rick, and then he kind of like, you know, he gasses out. So Rick's like, are you done? So then Rick just beats the shit out of him. he's like, I could have kicked your fucking ass and should I just kill you right now? You fucking, you know, worthless fuck. So,
are those Michonne, his words or yours?
He said something to that effect. I can't remember. Is Leroy there? I don't hear.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you just quiet.
Did you read this week's Walking Dead or no?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have anything to weigh in, or did Alex did Dave cover everything you had to say?
Negan got out. He's probably gonna fucking kill the kid or something and go to Rick and show him that he's a good guy.
Yeah. Apparently the kid, he was supposed to go to the hilltop, but he ends up trying to like convince Negan, hey, I can let you go and you can get with the Whispers and you can, I don't know, kill Rick as revenge or something. And you know, like Negan's like, whatever. Why should I do this? He's like, oh, okay. Well, not necessarily saying no. Well, then we find out that he's gone, but I think it's what he just said. I think because the way that Kirkman has been writing, he does stuff to lead you to believe it's going to happen, but it doesn't happen. He's either going to like trick the kid, be like, hey, Rick, he let me out. Hey, he's trying to kill you in order to gain favor.
Here's the thing. Negan was a giant dick, but he wasn't a complete idiot.
No, he's a smart guy.
Negan doesn't want the people who fucking cut up zombies and wear their skin and live like animals. He doesn't want them to win. That's not a better option for him. No. He's gonna want Rick's people to win. Like, at least they let him live. He's gonna be looking at it like, you know, these are a group of people who I can influence, who I can control. These other guys are fucking crazy. I don't wanna fuck with them.
Yeah. So, I'm pretty sure that's what's gonna happen in the next issue.
Or they'll wait a little bit and that'll be a big moment. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, you can only drag this out for so long.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on to our next book. Old Man Logan number 3, writer Jeff Lemire, art by Andre Sorrentino.
I'm gonna say this about this book, and it's not the book's fault, really, but I come to realization, all this stuff happens 8 months prior, mm-hmm. and you know, at the end of his book, nothing major is gonna happen.
Yeah.
You already know where he's gonna end up, and he may or may not kill Mysterio? That's like the big, he's looking to kill people, but he may end up killing Mysterio, and who cares?
Yeah, cause he hasn't been focused on since we came back from the relaunch, and frankly, he's a member of Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery, which includes 87 different villains.
And it's not even the Mysterio, it's a Mysterio.
Well, we don't know that anymore.
I'm pretty sure it's not that, the original.
Yeah, he could just be the Mysterio. You know.
And I like that they're willing to at least address the question that I've had for this book for a while now. Katie Bishop pretty much says, you know what? The fact of the matter is your future doesn't seem to be coming up, you know, about. It's like, are you just going to let your thing go and stop trying to kill these people?
I like Kate Bishop in this book.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is written pretty well.
I mean, Lemire should know how to write her because...
Yeah, he writes her in the other book.
He's writing her in her book. So, yeah, I mean, that was good. But it was... I didn't like this issue as much as the other ones because the things I enjoyed most were the parts where Kate Bishop was doing things or talking. I did like that they reaffirmed that this Wolverine is a killer. Like Driller.
Yeah, that's
I like that because the other Wolverine.
Another book he writes.
You remember before Wolverine, they kind of softened him and he was a teacher and.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now the other Wolverine, she doesn't kill and she does things a different way. It's nice to have old killing Logan back. That's good. Not fucking Pansy James.
And at least, like I said, there was that point I brought up earlier that, you know, Logan still wants to kill all these people, even though it's obvious that his future isn't going to come to pass, but he brings up the fact that, you know, it's over the years, tons of people have worn different capes. It's not a big deal for other people to don the costumes for him not to remember. So He sort of brushes it off, but at least he's willing to address. Lamar's willing to address that giant logic hole in this book.
He's trying to Wolverine is trying to justify to himself that what he's doing is right, even with all this evidence that what he's doing is not right, because it's easier for him. I mean, for him, his family is still dead. And these people are still the ones who killed them, even if they're not the people who killed them. Yeah, he's stuck in the past. He has no real purpose. This gives him a purpose. Obviously he comes to terms with this because he's on the X-Men now. And
yeah, that's why I'm saying there's nothing of real big consequence that's going to end up happening here.
Oh, but it's a fun read. The art's good.
Yeah, the art's, I mean, yeah, the writing's been great. I think the first two issues have been great. Art's great, but I don't know how many more issues you think this goes for.
That's another question I was going to bring up too. It's like,
isn't it?
It's going to be continuing, but after a while they have to address the fact that the story can't continue in this direction, not for very long. Well,
when you finish, you just change the story and you just have it be a book about Old Man Logan.
Yeah. I guess you can make it Old Man Logan in the present day while he's doing other X-Men stuff.
Yeah, because I mean, Wolverine was on the X-Men, but he had a solo title. A couple times he had two solo titles.
So it'll still be good. So,
yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our next book. Spider-Man number 2, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Sarah, let's see if I pronounce this, Pichelli.
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 My mistake.
Miles versus Blackheart round 2. He beats him again.
Good for him. Good for Miles.
He beat him badly.
Yeah.
And then
just killed.
In this issue, Spider-Man gave a speech on how he doesn't want to be the minority Spider-Man.
Yeah. A video blogger was talking about how, oh, look, there's a tear in his costume. He's a black man.
Well,
first of all, I'm half Hispanic.
She just assumed that he was not white.
Yeah, she's not sure if he's, you know, Indian descent or Hispanic.
But he's not white.
Yeah.
He's a person of color.
And therefore I like him. And he's like, why can't people just like me because I'm Spider-Man?
And at least they're really to address in this book the difference between Miles and Peter. Because the Amazing Spider-Man book focuses on Peter globetrotting all over the world. And this book is supposed to be the story of Spider-Man in New York City. So in that way, they kind of differentiate the two titles.
Well, and Spider-Man apparently endorsed him, although he was changing his mind in this. So there was that. But no, I did like the part where Miles gave that speech, though, because it was basically it was Bendis responding to people who complained that, oh, he's the fucking token black Spider-Man. It was him responding that by having the character say, no, that's not what I am. I'm Spider-Man. The problem with that is, as I pointed out last time, you're not Spider-Man. You're the second Spider-Man because Spider-Man is Peter Parker. And this book did nothing to solve that.
Nope.
That issue. But they did point out his costume is cooler, and his costume is cooler.
Yeah, I agree.
Powers are cooler too.
Because black and red is cooler than blue and red, also cooler than blue, red, and green. Which is what Spider-Man's current costume is. So.
Also in this issue, it looks like they're setting up something with a black cat.
Well, she's already been a villain.
Yeah, but I don't think she's messed with him yet.
Yeah, they were questioning, like, you know, with a new Spider-Man, how will the old Spider-Man's villains react to this? And, you know, Black Cat, who is a villain now, is of course doing push-ups and watching this being questioned.
One-handed
on
push-ups.
The news. Well, because she's tough.
She's from the street, yo.
Oh, I guess in this issue we finally got word. Remember we were speculating in the first issue if his dad knows he's Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah, he definitely knows.
Yeah, he definitely knows because he's like, hey, man, I'm sorry, but you're in trouble.
Yeah, they brought in his hardcore grandmother.
Yeah, his Puerto Rican grandma's all pissed.
To get him a talking to, and she is not happy. She was throwing out the Spanish. To remind you that she's not white.
You constantly have to be reminded that.
Well, not American, I guess. Or not, that's offensive, isn't it, if I say she's not American?
Yeah.
Well, because she is. Because they're part of America.
She's not ethnically white.
Right? Let's leave it at that before you dig yourself in deep.
Or black. Deeper. I'm not sure how to say it. They were.
Just leave it at that then.
I don't like when you have a character who speaks two languages and you force them to speak in the other language just to remind us that they speak another language. Like, the kid speaks English. Why wouldn't she speak to him in English?
The thing is, like, well, she's speaking that Spanglish where they do the Spanish.
She's also this the is, grandmother. You this, can get away with that.
This isn't something that is a character thing in a comic. This is something that happens in real life with the Cubans in South America, in South Florida.
Well, you never speak to us in Spanish.
If you live down there, there's plenty of people that do that. I'm not saying I'm one of those people. I'm just saying I see it all the time.
What Alex is saying is she was talking to her grandson who doesn't.
I've seen plenty of people that do that. I've seen.
All right, fair enough.
I'm just saying you haven't talked to us in Spanish yet. So
no, but I'm just saying I see where they're coming from with this because I've seen it.
Yeah, in Miami, but this is New York, dude.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm sure it's similar. I don't know. I'm not from New York, so
maybe she's from Miami.
She could be.
She could be. We don't know where they come from.
Yeah, because she said that she was visiting.
Yeah. So, there you go. All right. Dave was right, Folder.
And either way, I can read the Spanish, so it doesn't bother me.
I wasn't bothered by it. I was bothered by it for what they were doing, because they always do that.
Shoehorned it in there.
You know, it's like Gambit has to throw in a French word every once in a while. Mon ami.
Yes. Well, I don't know, but that could be a something that they do in New Orleans for a while.
Dude, if you ever talked to, listen, guy who works next to me, he's his terminal's in Louisiana. I hear these Creole motherfuckers talk. They're not throwing in a Mona me every other word. They barely speak English, dude. You can't understand these motherfuckers. If we got any people from Louisiana who are from that area who grew up in the swamp or whatever, you guys know what I'm talking about because you probably got a hard time understanding me.
Hey,
oh, by the way, the next issue of Spider-Man looks like Miss Marvel's making a guest appearance.
Well, that's always good. Cool. The book is apparently doing well, but you know, Miss Marvel helps everything because she's a superstar now.
Good for her.
I know. I'm happy.
All right, let's move on to our final book, Uncanny Avengers number 6, writer Jerry Duggan, art by Carlos Pacheco.
This was a filler issue leading to Avengers Standoff, by the way.
Yeah, but I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun.
This book, against all odds, became the second best Avengers book. And a large part of that is because of Deadpool.
Believe it or
not. Deadpool interacting with the other characters is kind of awesome. But, you know, he was interacting with Quicksilver in this. The best part of this was, and it was all a joke, we'd heard about how the old Avengers Mansion is now a theme hotel.
Yeah, it's a cosplay.
Yeah, but it's actually a place where, like, normal people get to go and dress up as superheroes and have sex in the Avengers Mansion.
Or just goofballs get to just dress up as their favorite Avenger and pretend to beat up on villains.
Yeah, which is good, but they still have the old Avengers vault in the basement. Because they couldn't take that out, I guess. But you to get in, you have to do the little eye, you know, the eye sensor thing, and only Avengers are keyed to it.
And apparently Deadpool is on the team because telepaths can't mess with his brain.
Has that always been a thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Because Deadpool is crazy.
Got it. Okay.
You can't take control of his mind. So he went down there with Quicksilver in the event that Red Skull was there. Now, Red Skull was there, but we learned in the last issue Red Skull can be invisible.
Yes.
Because of mind powers.
Yeah, he can make you not see him or see him as somebody else.
So apparently that does work on Deadpool.
Yeah, but they can't control his mind.
No, Deadpool didn't actually go in.
Yeah, this is the thing. Only Quicksilver went in because he had the Avengers clearance.
Yeah, Quicksilver went in really quick.
And it would have worked on him. Yeah, Quicksilver did a quick search to make sure and didn't see him. But, you know, Deadpool would have seen him, but Deadpool didn't go run around.
Well, that brings up the question, why not bring Deadpool in then?
Because they had no they don't know that Red Skull can make himself invisible.
Oh, okay, got it.
I mean, they should know that because he's got mind powers, but they were just doing a quick check.
Also, apparently he implanted something inside Quicksilver's mind.
Which will come in handy later.
Yes.
Okay.
And then the second plot of the book was the new human member, Synapse. She was being recruited by the royal inhuman family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she heads to New Attilan where uncontrollable Hellion appears after being exposed to the mist. Which she, you know, she calms him down somehow and asks Medusa to send her back home because, you know, Medusa's like trying really hard to recruit her. Apparently they know that her grandfather was the one who went nuts in the previous couple of issues. And they're also watching her brother, who I guess is I don't know if he's a inhuman or if he's I guess he has a gene. I can't remember what exactly happened, but
this actually needed to be done though, because they've done nothing with that character. She was just kind of thrown on the team, and we didn't know anything about her, but she's an inhuman. So it was actually really important that they did this with her. And honestly, I thought they probably should have done this in the first issue because she had, you know, character moments with her grandfather or whatever in the previous story arc. This would have come in handy if they would have done this.
It's supposed to be the whole gimmick of now they're adding an inhuman to the team. And it's like, okay, it's great you've done that, but you haven't established her in any way, shape, or form. She's
yeah, and even then when we got it in this, like, she's a new human. But she's not really involved with the Inhumans.
No.
Like, she still considers herself a human, pretty much.
Yeah, she's like Miss Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah. My only real criticism of this book is I read this book hoping we'd get some follow-up with the Hank Pym stuff, but...
It may be coming soon. The next two issues are crossover issues with the Avengers standoff.
Okay. That's going to do it for this week's book, so let's move on to our next segment. Book of the week. Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of the team. Everything is awesome. When we live in our dream. The great feeling all time I had all my life. Alex, your pick of the week?
I don't know. What did I put over on the show today?
You put over a lot of stuff. So I'm sort of there with you. I'm like, everything was pretty good, but nothing really stood out. I'm looking at this list.
Well, the best, I told you before, the best thing I read this week was Saga, because I didn't read it last week.
That doesn't really count, but, though.
I mean, for this week's books?
You put over Sheriff of Babylon pretty big.
Yeah, probably Sheriff of Babylon is what I like the most.
I'm going to go with Swamp Thing.
I'm going with Sheriff of Babylon.
Okay. So a heavy DC. For folks that say we never read DC. We picked all.
I'm sorry to bring this up, but I was on the board and I was in the creepy Foley thread. And there was another picture of Noelle Foley. That girl is just built to fuck. It's kind of it's almost amazing, but okay. She sounds like a retarded man when she talks. Thought I'd pop that into the show to remind them that I'm a guy.
The show. Yeah.
just throw that in there.
Yeah, we're working on limited time with your headset, so I'm glad we wasted time on that. All right, let's move on to our final segment next week's books. Wherever you go, whatever you do, I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes, or how my heart breaks, I will be right here waiting for you.
Richard Marx, that's a romantic song. I should send it to Noelle Foley.
There you go. Couldn't hurt, right? Where she can do say no? I'm not sure she'd be cool with your wife, though.
Let her know what's up. Dude, whatever. She's dating that clown motherfucker. All right, first, we got War Stories, number 17.
Yeah.
Let's see if that dude gets laid or not.
Let's see.
I don't know.
And my sneaking suspicion that one girl's a spy. See, that's followed through with.
I think that's a red herring.
Perhaps. All right, we're going through.
New Romancer, 4 of 6.
Yeah. It's going to be a great week next week.
Slash and Burn, number 5. Find out who the killer is. It's Freddy Krueger, by the way.
It's me, Austin. It was me all along, Austin.
That'd be awesome. It's not going to happen either, though.
It's a shame that it doesn't, though.
I'm sorry to tell you that. All right, and I'm looking.
I'm right there with you. I'm looking, too.
Yeah, it's
I'm down to Image.
Tough next week. It's getting
Ooh, Descender.
Descender? Oh, I didn't even get down there yet. Yeah, Descender's coming out. We should probably read that. Something will happen, maybe. Maybe not.
Jupiter Circle.
Are we going to continue reading that?
No.
No.
Oh, you guys are going to stop, too. It wasn't just me.
Dave, are you going to read it?
Well, I mean, it looks like a pretty light week. We'll see.
Okay. Let's put that in the maybe pile. Let's see how things pan.
All right. Wolverine, number 6. Amazing Spider-Man, number 9. Ooh.
By the way, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. number 3 is a crossover.
With what?
With Avengers Standoff.
Oh, fuck. We have to read that.
So it was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. you said?
Yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Number 3. Then we got Amazing Spider-Man, number 9.
Got that.
I'm just going to go ahead and read Black Knight since it's the last issue.
I'll put that
finish
in the
it off
file
for
too.
Us. Doctor Strange, number 6. Do you want to read Haunted Mansion 1 of 5?
What is it?
It's based on the Disney ride.
No.
Hey, Pirates of the Caribbean is awesome. That's based on Disney ride.
Howard the Duck.
It's got a good artist.
Who's it? Who's it have?
Whatever. You don't know him, but he's a good artist.
Do you want to maybe? Uh-oh. Should I put the maybe pile? Oh, wait, no.
Put it in the maybe pile.
Okay.
Could be good. Howard the Duck, number 5.
Oh, Jim Sterling has his.
No. Finish.
1 of 4.
No. No, I'm not reading any more Jim Starlin
then
fucking
don't read
Adam
it.
Warlock Thanos shit.
Apparently, this is a sequel to the Infinity Relativity.
Yes, they've all been sequels to each other, and it's not in continuity, and I'm not reading it.
Me and Dave will read it then.
And I probably won't, actually.
Okay, then let's
leave it off. I bet the art's good.
Let's leave it off then. If Dave's open to the meeting, he's not going to read it.
Mighty Thor, number 5.
Thor versus Odin.
Yeah, like I said, it should be a short fight.
Unless there's some gimmick to where it's not really Odin.
I'm leaning towards
that. Why does Mockingbird have her own book?
I don't know, and it's getting like 6 variant covers.
She's a featured character on that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show.
It's going to get canceled pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, don't tell them that.
I'm breaking ranks and not reading a number 1.
I'm not reading it either.
Yeah, I don't read either.
It's going to get canceled. It's going to get canceled. As fast
well,
as
if you say it like that, it will.
Yeah, well, I don't want to read it anyway. And besides, you don't want to read Infinity Entity anyway, so it's not like...
Hey, Miss Marvel, number 5.
Yeah, I got that already.
We dropped Spider-Gwen, didn't we?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, Spider-Man 2099, number 8. We're not reading Star Wars books anymore. Uncanny Avengers, number 7. That's coming out
they
fast.
In no time. Well,
that's also a crossover, by the way.
Oh, okay, good.
And also Star Wars, that was that's a reprint, by the way. That's not a new one.
Oh, it is?
Well, we're not going to read it anyway, so.
Okay.
Ooh, and Vision.
Vision, number 5.
Huzzah.
Ninjak, number 13.
Yeah. Give it up for Ninja K.
That's it.
Not too bad.
Let's see Ninja K, which will reveal that Shadow Man is getting relaunched as its own book.
I'm glad we wasted 4 issues of Ninjak on that?
Shut up, I want a Shadow Man book.
As do I, but we'd have to waste 4 issues of Ninjak to set that up.
Yeah, we did. You gotta set it up somewhere, dude.
But 4 issues? Come on.
Dude, only like 5,000 people buy these Valiant books. Come on, doesn't matter.
Alright, discluding Jupiter's Circle, Black Knight, and Haunted Mansion, we got 15 books.
Oh, slightly more.
How do you figure slightly more than all than this?
Yeah,
week?
leave Jupiter Circle off. Let's read Haunted Mansion.
I'm not reading Haunted Mansion.
Come on, bitch. Read it.
So I want to play the music too.
Yeah, don't be a pussy. You know, I've been to homie? Disneyland twice now. Both times I went, it was during holiday season, so they changed it to Nightmare Before Christmas.
Aw, sucks to be you.
And I've never seen the actual Haunted Mansion. Well, I really like Nightmare Before Christmas. I was never an emo kid, but I like the songs.
Let's see if we can find the music.
What's this? What's this?
Let's go back.
Delight.
We wrap it up.
Yeah, let's just wrap it up.
They are wrapping it up.
We'll play that next week. When I can actually properly do my research and get it ahead of time. All right. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, see you guys next week. Adios.